The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten, as it always is, by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our program for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the March 2020 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. Theme this month is Pilot Mountain, plus Weekend in Maybury, Off-Road in the Uaris, the Piedmont Gold Rush, and more. We have finished with the pictorial last week, so we're going to head into the main stuff now. First article is entitled Mountains in Our Midst. Nice picture here of a craggy peak with a few hearty evergreens that somehow find footing or a crack to work their way in on the top. A beautiful picture of the in the near front the tops of all of the green trees down below, and then it drops off and it gets really hazy blue as we head into the distance and out to the horizon, and we get to light blue headed up, and then we get the clouds, wispiness across, and then it gets heavier and heavier, and they get darker and darker as we go higher and higher. The caption for this opening picture says, "The view from Hanging Rock in the Sauratown Mountains," that's S-A-U-R-A town, Sauratown Mountains, "can stretch to Winston-Salem. More than 704 species of flora grow here, including Virginia and Table Mountain pines." This is not the West, the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Smokies. Here, gentle farmland suddenly puckers into hills that sprout craggy knobs. The summits may not be as towering, but the views are just as endless. So are the land's stories. These are the middle mountains of our Piedmont Plateau, the Uhari and Sauratown ranges, Pilot, Crowder's, and Hanging Rock peaks. As some of our oldest natural landmarks, they've earned our respect. Written by Louise Jarvis Flynn and Mark Kemp. Crowder's Mountain. The pinnacle of Kings Mountain is one of two summits in Crowder's Mountain State Park. To get here, hiker Ginny Williams took Pinnacle Trail from Sparrow Springs Road near Gastonia. She faces west toward the Kings Mountain Energy Center in the distance. On a clear day, you could see the Blue Ridge Mountains farther west and the South Mountains to the northwest. How ironic, the South Mountains to the northwest. So there is this woman standing up against a small, I guess you'd call it a boulder. There's a bunch of them around, but this one comes up to about her waist, and she's leaning against it, looking out on the scene just described. The sun is coming through some clouds and is giving that interesting effect, like a robe coming down, little changes in the colors of the light. The Middle Mountains of North Carolina are rich in natural landmarks, precious minerals, and history. There's the Sauratown Range to the north of Winston-Salem, with its glorious views from Hanging Rock and Pilot Mountain, and an old mineral spring resort, Vade Mecum, that offers rest and relaxation for well-heeled vacationers at the turn of the 20th century. There's Yuhari National Forest, east of Charlotte, with its sprawling lakes and rivers, its 50 miles of hiking trails, and a string of once lucrative gold mines. And then there are the peaks at Crowder's Mountain State Park, near the South Carolina border, with a view from one of the summits that looks west to their more famous cousins, the Appalachians, way in the distance. Hanging Rock State Park, Danbury. Gaze out from the 8,605-acre Hanging Rock State Park's namesake peak and see a rolling landscape that includes the park's highest point, the 2,579-foot Moore's Knob, and then head down to the Moore's Wall Loop and hike to the top of the knob, where you'll find a stunning 360-degree view of Virginia to the north and Pilot Mountain to the west. Now, this photo is taken from a peak of one little ridge here, and there's a dog right on the edge of the mountain there, right up against a big granite boulder, and we hope he doesn't take a step further to the front or he's in deep trouble. And then in the distance, it all gets golden brown, and the light again is filtering down through the sun, and it's making these lines of slightly different colors as it comes down. And they have annotated the picture at the highest point with a little arrow, and it says "Knob, Moore's Knob." And this is all under the heading Middle Mountains. Now I've got the Yuaris. One of the state's best-kept secrets is the 50,645-acre Yuhari National Forest. That's U-W-H-A-R-R-I-E. I pronounce it Yuhari. With its official 20-mile Yuhari National Recreational Trail in Montgomery County and an extra 20 to 30 miles that continue north into Randolph County. The Yuhari Trailblazers have been working for decades to connect all the trails, including this one at Walker's Creek, where hiker Marcus West negotiates a riverbed. And so this person is walking along some rocks, which look like they might be a little wet. We don't see water per se, but clearly this is where water can come rushing down the hill. And it's pretty thick forest, although low growth all around the hiker. How about Morrow Mountain, hugging the Yadkin and PD rivers on the western edge of the Yuhari National Forest is Morrow Mountain State Park. Looking east from the summit, a haze hovers over the PD River, which peeps out from between the tops of Tater Top Mountain in the foreground and Mill Mountain. So we're looking over a railing here, and there's some tops of some trees that are... Obviously, it drops off here, and these have grown up, and it's just about the height of where we're standing. And then it drops off completely into a valley, and then up comes the Tater Top Mountain, and in the distance, Mill Mountain. Very low-hanging clouds here in the distance. There's a range of mountains in the background, and just in front of them is this long, bubbly, wispy stream of clouds that go completely from left to right. And finally, Pilot Mountain. In 1753, when Moravian settlers traveling to what would become Winston-Salem spotted the Pilot Mountain in the distance, they knew they were close to their new home. The moniker stuck, and to this day, Big Pinnacle, Pilot Mountain's distinctive quartzite knob, is one of the state's most iconic landmarks. Unlike our western mountains, which are surrounded by foothills, Pilot Mountain rises up from flat farmland where old tobacco barns still dot the landscape. Today, a visit to Pilot Mountain State Park is a tour of North Carolina history. It certainly is an interesting peak. You've got this... this hill, this big, I'll call it a big hill, rising up, and it's pretty even, and it's green growth all around. And then all of a sudden at the top, there's this big lump, and you can tell it's rock because it's dark, except up on the top and at the bottom where trees are growing. I'm sorry, not dark, but lighter than the surrounding. It's the color of rock, no kidding. And in the foreground in this picture, there's a log cabin. Very good shape, and some logs piled up on the right-hand side. And a little insert here for Rock House in Pinnacle. The John Martin House, built around 1785 in Stokes County, is a historic spot to explore near Pilot Mountain. During the Revolutionary War, Martin was a member of the Overmountain Men who defeated the Loyalists in October of 1780. His home, made from fieldstone and once rising 4 stories, with walls 3 feet thick, was used as militia headquarters during the war. So what we have here is the remains of the house. It appears to be stacked stone, and there's a left side and a right side, and there's some pillars in the rear, and steps in the front leading up to what was actually a porch. And what's interesting is they have made it a little sturdy by putting in a couple of tall beams and interconnecting the beams with wire so that the walls don't fall over. And everybody can enjoy that for as much of what it leaves to our imagination as what it must have looked like once before. And now the next article, Middle Mountains Pilot Mountain, Peak Experience. The rocky knob of Pilot Mountain, rising 2,400 feet in the Yadkin Valley, was the great guide for the Sora tribe. Today, the striking pinnacle continues to draw us toward it. From birdwatchers and hikers to Andy Griffith fans and proud locals, those who know this landscape understand why it rises above the rest. 2-page spread here. From the Little Pinnacle Overlook at Pilot Mountain State Park, the iconic Big Pinnacle appears to glow in the dawn light. Close up, we see a huge hunk of rock off to the right. Lots of trees on the top. Straight sides. Make for some interesting climbing if you're into that and can do it. And then it slopes off, lots of green, and then it drops off, and you've got the valley and the haze that fills the valley, and in the distance, the other pinnacle that they talk about. And you can also just barely make out that it has some antennas on top, which are typical of the peaks of mountains. Making a mountain. Technically, it's not even a mountain, or at least not what we typically think of as a mountain. Pilot Mountain, the entire Soratown range, including Hanging Rock, didn't burst from the ground due to tectonic shifts or volcanic activity. Rather, these distinctive elevations remained after the land around them eroded over time. In fact, the peaks we see today were once the bottom of a shallow sea. They're merely sand transformed by heat and pressure into sturdy quartzite. Over time, the quartzite broke off, forming cliffs and creating that exposed knob known as Big Pinnacle, so iconic that Pilot Life Insurance Company used its image in their logo. A destination for generations of school field trips, hikes, and family picnics, the mountain gained worldwide fame and a stream of new visitors when Andy Griffith made it Mayberry's notable landmark, too. While the land is now a state park, before that and for much longer, it was a local tourist attraction and often the site of a rollicking party scene. "That peak over there," says Kathy Hunter, pointing toward Big Pinnacle, which is now closed to the public, "they used to have wooden steps that went up the side of it." Hunter grew up on a nearby tobacco farm and now works by the entrance to the park at Pilot Knob Inn. She remembers exploring the mountain around the time it became a state park in 1968 and just before the steps, which led up the vertical 200-foot-high knob that caps the 2,200-foot elevation, were removed. "When you got halfway to the top, you didn't want to look down, and you didn't want to look up," she says, laughing. "You wanted to keep moving." The wooden stairs were built by W.L. Spoon, an engineer who purchased the mountain in the 1920s and developed it for tourism. He approached the mountain as a kind of P.T. Barnum character, explains Mark Farnsworth, a pilot mountain historian. He was a showman and a promoter. Spoon built roads up the mountain and developed a picnic area at Little Pinnacle, the lower peak with an overlook. He made an airstrip at the top and said it was the highest airport in the South, Farnsworth said. But Spoon wasn't the mountain's first booster. In the middle of the 19th century, members of the Gilliam family owned Pilot Mountain, along with a hotel at its base, which they publicized nationally. People wanted to see this curiosity of nature, a mountain that stands alone, Farnsworth says. The Gilliams set up rickety-looking ladders for tours of the peak. During World War II, a local Chevrolet dealer, J.W. Beasley, bought the property and turned it into a local hangout to see and be seen. To draw crowds and charge admission, Beasley built a swimming pool with two diving boards and a slide, and a dance hall pavilion where campgrounds are now. On sunny weekends, some 100 folks paid 50 cents each, 25 cents for kids, to take a dip in the pool. For another 50 cents, they could drive up the mountain, recalls Dean Gordon, whose grandparents were the caretakers of the property for the Beasleys. Bands played at night, usually beach music, and Gordon remembers sneaking out of the second floor of his grandparents' house and wandering over to the Pilot Pavilion to listen. Just a concrete slab with a roof over it is how R.L. Williamson, who grew up in Mount Airy and now lives in Emerald Isle, describes the 60s pavilion setup. But what went on under that roof was epic. A couple hundred people, all shag dancing. A band called the King Bees from King played on Thursdays in the summer from dusk till midnight. Mount Airy guys would meet up with Pilot Mountain girls or girls from Winston-Salem, and there was a lot of mingling, Williamson says. The view from there wasn't anything outstanding, but then you were probably viewing the girls more than the scenery, if I remember correctly, he adds with a wink. Not all of the memories were good ones, though. The Pilot Mountain party scene took a dark turn when two people were arrested for fighting. They were brought to the old jail in Pilot Mountain, Gordon explains, and an officer was killed at the jail as a result of that. The tragedy marked the end of an era, shortly after the dance hall shut down. The pool stayed open until Beasley's widow, Pearl, sold the property to the state for a park. While folks would miss the pool parties and bands, locals were grateful that the family didn't sell the mountain for private development. There was a lot of excitement about the state buying the mountain and preserving it, Gordon says. Today, the wild nights may be over, but the quiet, starry skies over Pilot Mountain are just as magical. Building memories. When Jim Powell was growing up in Winston-Salem in the 70s, Pilot Mountain State Park was a favorite family destination. It was an all-day event, Powell says, of their picnic lunches with a cake and presents, too, on special occasions. Then we'd kid that we had to hike to work it all off. Memories of those days came back to Powell, a managing principal at ADW Architects in Charlotte, when he heard about plans for a new visitor center at Pilot Mountain. He admits it had been quite a while since I'd been, so he and his team hopped in the car. They wanted to learn about the project before interviewing for it. When they arrived, Park Superintendent Matt Windsor took them to the site, a wooden knoll down the road from the 1981 park office that would be decommissioned. As soon as they looked up at the rocky knob, inspiration struck. Spontaneously, we started sketching in the dirt, Powell says. It just sort of happened. It was beautiful. And Matt was smiling at us. Windsor has spent 12 years watching visitors discover the wonders of the pinnacles. People are really moved by being on top of the mountain at Little Pinnacle Overlook, especially because it has a 360-degree view, he says. The peak of Big Pinnacle has been off-limits to visitors since shortly after the state bought the property, and the three mountaintop acres are now designated as a national natural landmark. Over the decades, the Yadkin River section of the park was added, and trails were improved. But the parking facilities are not designed to handle the 700 to 1,000 cars that enter the park each day, close to 2,000 on a weekend. The new center, which Powell's firm designed, will include more parking and shuttle service and will open later this spring. It will address another issue, too, visibility. Previously, Big Pinnacle could only be seen from the hiking trail. Powell's design will bring the show-stopping knob into view inside, too. We wanted you to be able to look out from the visitor center and visually connect yourself to the landscape, he says. The new visitor's distinctive roof, long and angled, will allow visitors to see the knob from within the exhibit hall. The slanted roof literally points their eyes toward it, Powell says. Inside, visitors will find exhibits that explore the natural and cultural history of Pilot Mountain, the Yadkin River, and the Soratown Mountains. Windsor is thrilled to have space for more education, but even he knows that the attraction everyone wants to see up close awaits just outside. View from the top. On Little Pinnacle, the hardcore hawk watchers are out, binoculars and weather equipment in hand, dutifully counting birds. Starting in September, between 2,000 and 5,000 broad-winged hawks fly south over Big Pinnacle on their way from Canada and the northeastern United States to Central America. Every year, the Forsyth County Audubon Society sends chapter members to Pilot Mountain to tally the birds on their migratory path, thanks to chapter founder Ramona Sneavely, who discovered the connection between wind patterns and the bird's journey through her research that began in 1973. In the fall, when the northwest tailwinds push southeast, the hawks travel in thermals, pockets of warm air that rise, taking the birds with them and providing advantageous conditions for extended gliding. Within the thermal, the hawks circle around one another. It looks like if you were to put loose tea in a kettle and stir it, says North Carolina State Park Ranger Jesse Anderson. Hundreds of hawks can circle inside one kettle, so it's these kettles that birdwatchers count. But not until the grouping starts to break. The hawks will gain altitude to a certain level in the atmosphere when the warm air cools or gets pushed off by upper atmospheric winds, Anderson explains. The thermal then dissipates and the hawks start streaming, which is the easiest time to count them. But if the birds only wanted thermals, they could migrate along any number of paths. They pass over Big Pinnacle in updrafts, air currents that cross flat land until reaching a mountain, which pushes the current up and over, allowing the raptors to gain additional altitude. If you're thinking it would make more sense for the birds to travel over mountains with higher elevations, you're right. We are not by any means one of the highest hawk migration count sites, Anderson says. Those sites follow the Appalachian Mountains, which serve as a huge flyway for birds. Nonetheless, 13 species of diurnal raptors migrate over the Monadnock, an Algonquin word meaning lone mountain, including bald eagles, peregrine falcons, and osprey, although 95% of all raptors counted are broad-winged hawks. The public is always invited to join the bird census. A cabinet at the top of Little Pinnacle, where counters gather, holds the current tally for anyone who's curious. The park also offers a program for junior hawk watchers and schedules events during the International Hawk Migration Week. Seeing a large kettle of broadwings move through is spectacular and special, Anderson says. You're seeing something that happened for eons. The static and only imperceptibly changing mountains and the dynamic, constantly shifting collection of birds have a unique relationship. They are in the middle of a 2,000 to 3,000 mile journey that is going to lead them back in less than 6 months, Anderson says. Part of the enjoyment is seeing a large group of something so well designed. There's a picture here. It says from the Little Pinnacle Overlook, Park Ranger Jesse Anderson keeps close watch on the hawk and raven nesting grounds atop Big Pinnacle. So here he is leaning up against a fence post, which is between two stone columns, and he's standing on some boulders that are set up for the floor, or perhaps they were there naturally. And he's got his binoculars up, and he's looking over at the pinnacle, where the birds are all left alone because we can't go up there anymore. And now Rock of Ages, Pilot Mountain's knob is made of quartzite. But about 20 miles northeast near Mount Airy, you can access what's deep beneath the knob and most of the area, a seemingly endless field of granite, the official state rock of North Carolina. The area, locals call it the rock, the quarry, and the hill, is the world's largest open-face quarry. In 1889, the North Carolina Granite Corporation was formed on the site. They drilled down 500 feet, and it's still solid, says recently retired employee Bernard Allen, whose family has a long history at the mine. A landscape feature so dominant will shape its surroundings. The quarry certainly affected the lives and fortunes of Allen's family. He worked for the mining company for 47 years. His father worked there, too, as did three of his brothers. Me and my dad rode to work together for years, Allen recalls. In the late 60s and early 70s, there used to be a little store on the entrance road. Every morning we would stop, and Dad would either buy a fig cake or an oatmeal cake, and then he'd get a banana. Whole family trees have sprung up around the granite mine in Mount Airy. Allen was one of 15 children after his father died of a heart attack at age 58. Allen became worried about his own heart, but he didn't stop working. Coming here every day was just like home, he says. He was such a dependable employee and friend that his coworkers voted him union president more than 25 years in a row. During Allen's decades-long tenure at the quarry, he worked in every department, removing rock from the ground, hauling rock to the sheds, cutting rock, and carving rock. If you don't go home with some dust in your neck and the cuffs of your pants, you ain't done nothing, he says with a chuckle. Of every job Allen held, from bagging grit to traveling to meet clients, he says, working on the hill was my favorite. It was not the carving work with its inherent artistry that he most loved, but the hard labor of extracting granite from the ground. To see this great big old rock pulled out and loaded on a truck, and the next time you see it, it's in so many different pieces, it was amazing, he says. I've been up there and had icicles hanging on me, but I loved it. That doesn't ever leave you. And it will never will. Truly, Allen has made his headstone out of White Mountain, or Mount Airy granite. He also made stones for his father, mother, and the 9 siblings who have predeceased him. All my needs is a death date on it, he says, before adding with a laugh, and I can't put that on there yet. Well, there's one more piece of this article entitled Mayberry's Major Attraction. We aren't going to have time to read it. The picture here is of the Earl Theater. It says, May at last, a portrait of the Everett brothers. Friday 7, Saturday 44 to 7, I guess. It says Saturday 47, Sun 47, Mun 7, Wed 7. You figure it out. I don't know. And there's a picture of the sheriff's vehicle from Mayberry just sitting out front. Well, that is about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments? Questions? Call us at the studios, 919-832-5138. So long until next time.